And welcome back to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for April 1995. I'm Fred Volpe, and I've got some information on a FM newsletter. A lot of people like to find out what's going on the FM dial. And there's a magazine which is available, a publication called the FM Media. It's the FM Radio Newsletter, published by Dr. Bruce F. Elving, Ph.D. And this newsletter pretty much tracks what Jerry Starr does on the AM switch. It's published monthly and available on a subscription basis of $65 annually, or single copies, $5.95. For more information, contact Dr. Bruce F. Elving, Ph.D., publisher, at the FM Media Office, 241 Anderson Road, ESCO, that's ESKO, Minnesota, 55733-9413. Now here's Phil Wayne with a look at the Market Scope.
All Oldies FM, and now All Oldies AM. This is Honey Radio, WHNE Birmingham, and WQTE Monroe, FM 95 and AM 56. Honey Radio, total gold.
IDXers, radio buffs, hams, people who have only AM radios, guys who hang around radio properties looking lost, Fred Richards groupies, and those with nothing better to do. Now, don't be offended. I fit squarely into one or more of those categories myself, and you're free to guess which one. To be honest with you, if you're in the same boat with me, maybe you should be offended. This is Phil Wayne from Market Scope, where every April 1st, anything goes. And any complaint should be directed to Jerry Starr's home phone between the hours of 2:45 and 4:30 a.m. Now, this first bit was submitted by Dale Hand. The only reason we're using it here is so that we could play it before John Bowker used it on his travel log.
Now, Saturday calls for mostly cloudy skies, windy, with a 30% chance of some thunderstorms. The highs will be in the low 70s. South winds will be 15 to 25 miles per hour. And gusty lake wind advisories are on area lakes. And you're listening to KJIM 1500 on your AM dial right here in the heart of Sherman Denison, and Sunday mornings at...
An Apex 320, EXR, EX4, a Lexicon 200, two DAP 610s, a Texar Prism, and an Orban 8100A XT2. What are they? Devices we've installed in the planet transmitter sequence. Devices that help us clean the air. We don't think the radio should pollute the air we're on. Do you? Cleaner on the air. Because on this planet, we like to let the music breathe too. The planet, 96.3.
Top 10 reasons to watch Fox on TV2. Number 10. No more CBS, otherwise known as crusty, boring shows. Number 9. Hey, this Fox thing is really catching on. Number 8. NFL football. Number 7. You probably won't get Channel 62 signal anyway. Number 6. Fox shows are kicking it. Number 5. Two words. Heather Locklear. Number 4. We have a new attitude. Got a problem with that? Number 3. Did we mention Heather Locklear? Number 2. You might get to see Luke Perry's naked bun. And the number one reason to watch TV2 after the Fox launch is because it'll really tick off all the other stations. The launch is on. TV2 is now Fox. It takes two.
We got a Fox attitude.
Hot at number 12, that is Def Leppard in The Photograph on 96 Now. Tom Tripler with you on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. It is shirt sleeve weather out there. Temperature 70. Well, the rumor is he's going to bring his concert to Detroit then to Joe Louis Arena in July. That's just a rumor, though. Hot at number 6, David Bowie and Let's Dance on 96 Now. I'm Tom Tripler. It's 1 o'clock.
The Motor City Music Mother,
99.5,
Detroit's Fox.
99.5, the Fox Monkey.
wasn't able to song. It's George Michael. And this is Terry Young, a brand new song, brand new radio station. We're taking votes for your favorite song right now. Now, the Fox phone number here to the radio station is 298-6900. Okay, the new Fox. You call us, let you know what you want to hear. We'll get it on for you, okay? That's it. 298-6900. Terry Young, the motor mouth here at the all-new Fox.
When you hear Dick Burton in the morning and the best variety of music all day, you're hearing WCZY-FM, Detroit, the unknown DJ, straight up noontime on a more music weekend.
All hits,
C95.5. Good morning, world. I ain't afraid of you, because this is going to be a country day. A country day.
I think I'll just take one big yawn, and then you all can come live in my mouth. I mean, it's a cave, I'll tell you. It's 4 degrees here. I started out in Howell about 4 below. It's a little colder than the suburbs, I guess. Well, actually, Howell is a suburb of Lansing.
We'll take good care of your car, because we want Goodyear to be your auto service center for good.
George Strait is here this cold morning. Some clouds moving in with a high 17. That's not bad. 11 above 20. Oop, low 20s. Hey, we have a heat wave this week. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Did you know that it is Monday? It is the fourth day of February. This is, if you get paid by the month, this is the one where you figure you're really, getting the boss, right? And there's long 31-day ones. They're bad, but this is a good one. We're having you heading for a high today of 17. There's no problems in the freeway system this morning, and we're going to tell you about some of the things that are going on. This Thursday from 6 to 8 o'clock, I'll be over at Buff Whalen Chevrolet. We'll have a special surprise for you. Maybe we'll tell you ahead of time towards the end of the week. Well, I don't know for sure, see, but I think they're going to be crushing some cars.
Good morning. This is WHND, Monroe, Michigan, a Greater Media broadcast service. WHND is licensed to operate from 6 a.m. to sunset at 560 kilohertz. WHND is authorized to originate portions of our programming from our auxiliary studio in Royal Oak Township, Michigan, transmitted by studio transmitter link KRG25. Our mailing address is 5305 Vineyard Drive, Monroe, Michigan, 48161.
You're listening to WHND, Monroe, Detroit, AM 56.
WHND.
All oldies, all the time.
1957. Your teddy bear.
You. WHND, Honey Radio, and Teddy Bear Richards, my first day batting the breeze with you. A little bit of light snow today, and a high of 20 degrees. Not bad, it's 10 right now.
Nights didn't seem so long no more.
Yeah, there they go. The Turtles on WHND, Honey Radio. They got together in 65 out in L.A., and they've been doing pretty good. But, of course, now things have changed for them. It's Inauguration Day with Teddy Bear Richards, your brand-new morning man on Honey Radio, WHND, batting the breeze with you at 6:08. That's Farmer Jack's savings time. And time to save on Windmill Farm 2% low-fat milk. Pick up a nutritious 2-pack gallon for just $1.59 this week only at Farmer Jack.
This is Marilyn Turner.
And I
know you're working hard.
For Fox FM, Gladys Knight and the Pips. Save the overtime for me. You're listening to the new Fox FM. In less than 90 days, we'll have a chance to bring you the Fox 24 hours a day. But for now,
We're previewing the type of station you told us you wanted. If you like what you're hearing, we would appreciate your thoughts. Drop us a letter or a postcard. Fox FM, Box 480 Windsor, N9A6M6, or Box 282 Southfield, 40037. With your help, we'll be on round the clock soon. But for now, it's every morning from 7 till 9 a.m. and every afternoon from 5 till 7 p.m. We'll return to the Fox again tomorrow morning at 7. And now, once again, big bands, ballads, and more.
My favorite picture of you is in the purple corset.
Really?
Yeah, very nice. Very modest, aren't we? Now, do you ever shave that thing? Because you never have shaved that. And then in the pictures, you have every bit of your hair.
I trim it.
Super. With hedge clippers. I love it. Anyway, let's thank Michelle Wright. Yay! Now, how it's your birthday party. Up to Donna Fiduca in the Encounter. Okay. Let me touch your leg some more.
Okay, first of all, westbound on Route 287 in Westchester County, Shadow tells us a good 5 to 6 miles of extra volume to the Tappan Zee Bridge. Please be sure to fasten your WNBC belt. I'm Donna Fiducia in the Encopter on WNBC.
More to come on the Howard Stern 31st Birthday Extravaganza.
Here we go. Sound like Larry King. I don't hear myself. All right. One of them is 7 feet tall. The other is 7 feet 4 inches.
Ooh.
And that's just their genitalia. They're Ralph Sampson and Akeem Olajuwon. Akeem Olajuwon, which is the African name. By the way, Robin and I have come up with African names for ourselves.
Yes.
Mine is Boogaloo Shrimp.
Uh-huh. And I am Shabadoo.
Shabadoo. If you want to address your mail to us like that,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, that's okay with us.
Because they'll send it to us if you say Howard Stern or Boogaloo Shrimp.
Yeah.
Howard, this is Phil Donahue. Pleased to wish you a happy birthday and to say what you already know, that I listen to you more than perhaps any other New Yorker. You are at the top of my things to listen to. You and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir give me more enjoyment than anything else I can think of on radio. Happy birthday, Howard.
Howard Stern Countdown, number 12.
Right now, it's partly cloudy, 62 degrees at Hopkins, 63 in Brook Park, and 64 downtown. The next news this morning at 6:30, bulletins broadcast immediately on 14K. I'm Jim Hale.
14K. Plays more music.
Good morning, 6:10, 10 past 6. It's Friday. Boy, that sounds good. We've got more rock and roll solid gold from the five Americans, and I see the light.
WDHF salutes CFL and wishes them success with their new beautiful music format. Now, for the best hit music in stereo, try WDHF FM 95.5. You'll hear... ways for you to win cash.
You just won $595.51.
Oh, God, I can't believe it.
WDHF 95.5 FM.
Monday evening, CFL switches to easy listening and soft instrumentals. And to many of you, it'll be like losing an old friend. If you like rock and contemporary music and lyrics, where will you turn Tuesday? The answer? FM 96. BBM FM. Where your friends are waiting.
CFL Jim Bernard at 557. After years of preparation for a Jesuit ministry and funking the celibacy and poverty questions on his final exam, Dickie Shannon has turned to a life of rock and roll radio. Father Shannon?
Yes?
It has been nice working with a professional, and someday I hope I have the opportunity to do so.
Bless you.
I just think he has made the sign. Anyway, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone here at the world's greatest rock and roll radio station, Super CFL, especially Chuck Lee, the Alabama Flash, my engineer. Really, really the world's greatest.
it hadn't been for him, I don't think I would have survived here 2 minutes. And John Gannis, my newsman, they put up with much. What do you have to say about that? Do you agree?
More than you know.
I'm thankful to have had the opportunity to be here and to work with some true professionals. Bingo! There you go. Till the next time we meet, may God grant you long life, health, happiness, peace, serenity, wisdom, and courage. Goodbye forever from Jim Bernard Hebel at Super CFL.
9:55 with Tim Kelly. Well, these are my last words. CFL. I feel like I should have something heavy to say. But I don't. Can't think of a thing. Don't let your meatloaf? No, that's no good. Well, what the hell? Thanks. Goodbye. Stay high. CFL. Iggy Shannon, 3:58. Wonderful people. I sure as hell gonna miss you. Be good.
If you learn anything from this tape, it's got to be how radio is always changing, especially in the last few years or so. I hope you enjoyed this April's collection of radio bits and pieces. And now, here's the holy historian of the Heterodynes, John Bowker.
Here's the big boy with the big boy voice, John Bowker.
And now, historical moments in radio. A look back over the years at the events that have shaped the radio dial and made this the hobby that we have today. You know, for the past few months, we've dealt with everything from how factory lofts were redecorated into radio studios, all the way up to how the equipment and the staff were paid for. Well, today, we want to strike out in a slightly different direction and to start filling you in on some key dates. Dates that have permanently marked the broadcasting industry and even some of the stations. I urge you, as we go along, try to keep in mind that things were very different in the months and years before each of the bold steps were taken that we're going to be identifying for you. Now, here's today's example. March 16th, 1927. Nice spring day in Washington, D.C. And that was the day five men got together for the first time in a rather new government building, actually, just down from the White House. Five men who had been asked by President Coolidge to do whatever was needed to end the senseless interference and jamming that was going on all over the country on the radio. And on that day, the five men all agreed that radio licenses would have to be redone completely. On that day, all radio licenses became invalid in the United States. And I mean all licenses, all the transoceanic stations, all the marine stations, and the coast stations, and the broadcasting stations, even the 14,885 amateur radio stations that had been licensed to that time. All these licenses became invalid, technically, on March 16th, 1927. People were told you can go on transmitting, but you have no license. This meant that the five men then could reissue the licenses with any new terms they felt appropriate. Broadcast stations were among the first to be reissued. Each station that had been on the air was given a license valid for 60 days. That's right, just 2 months. But the enormous difference in the new license was that the stations were given their center frequency instead of wavelength. The band for broadcasting was chopped up into 96 channels, each spaced 10 kilohertz, one from the other, and running from 550 to 1500 kilohertz, or as they said in those days, kilocycles per second. Same thing. Now, this had been expected for quite a while, and some stations had already fallen into that pattern, but really only out of desperation. Remember, now, after the WJAZ decision that we talked about a year or so ago on this column, there was no regulation of broadcasting whatsoever. And as I say, that had been, what, a year before any of this happened? The other key change these five men made that day was insisting that each station stay within 50 hertz of its assigned channel. Before then, the stations had been allowed to wander as much as 500 hertz off frequency. Now, it had been expected that many broadcasters would have to go off the air since this stringent requirement of holding the frequency tolerance to only 50 hertz was technology that only few of them could afford. But it was here that Synergy stepped in. The National Broadcasting Company, of course, didn't want any of its affiliated stations to be forced off the air by this new requirement, so they saw to it that NBC stations were able to obtain and install the precision equipment they'd need. This helped bring the price of equipment down to an amount that virtually all the Sirius stations could afford. And in fact, our five men started with 681 broadcast stations, and at least that was the number of licenses they think that they had, and that was the number that became invalid on March 16th, 1927. And by 1932, the number of broadcasters had dropped to only 604. But the radio dial had been cleaned up. Now, the sound systems of the day simply couldn't reproduce the low-frequency growl of a station that might have wandered 40 or 50 hertz off its assigned channel. So just about everyone was happy. Well, not everyone. Within a year of taking over the regulation of broadcasting, the Federal Radio Commission, as our five men had been called then, had cut the number of nighttime operations from 565 down to fewer than 400. The cuts continued for 5 years. Most of the nighttime permits were given to network stations. And when the clear channel assignments were made for 50,000-watt stations, 21 of the 24 channels were given to stations either of the NBC Red, the NBC Blue, or the Columbia chain of stations. Did anyone mind? Well, you're darn right they minded. But more on that another time. For Historical Moments, this is John Bowker.
The DX Audio Service, Musings from Members. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views of the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, the editors, or publishers. Members may muse by calling the action line 24 hours a day.
Hello, DX Audio listeners. This is Ray Rokita calling from Lansing, Michigan. Want to spread some information for the magazine. As of March 1st, Lansing, Michigan made history and another country music turn. We now have a third country music FM station. WVIC at 94.9 changed its format from rock music to wild country. They call the station now The Cat, and they plan to keep the call letters WVIC. Thanks, and enjoy the magazine very much.
Hello, Fred and DX Audio Service members. This is Victor Schmidt reporting on March the 4th. We have a format change in the Washington, D.C. area. WXTR 104.1 and its sister station 103.9 in the Frederick area has changed formats. They are no longer playing oldies of the 50s and 60s. They are now playing oldies of the 1970s from the Guess Who to KC and the Sunshine Band.
This is Tim Hendel in Miami. I really like Bruce Conti's international column. Please keep up the good work. In particular, I like the fact that he mentions what kind of equipment people use for their DXing, and I like the samples of stations, such as the station from Venezuela that we heard coming in New Hampshire. Again, thanks.
Fred, this is Dave Haley in Westerville, Ohio. I'm on your mailing list, H-E-A-L-E-A. And I think we need some kind of quick reference card with all of the addresses for the publication center, for yourself and so on. Not all of us have a computer and know where to go on the tape to get the info that we need. So if we could have some kind of quick reference card that could be sent to us with all the addresses when we're being assisted by a sighted person, I think that would be very helpful. Thanks again.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Schwab on March the 15th with a couple of pieces of information. First of all, I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, by the way. First of all, the station on 1130 over in Camden, about 30 miles away from me, is still silent, and WOMG AM on 1320 here in Columbia has new call letters. They're now WIFW. They're continuing to simulcast with their oldies FM, but sometime in the month of April, they're supposed to go to a news format and get some news from WIS-TV and some from the AP Radio News syndicated format service. That's all for now. Have a good day, and 73.
Instead of running up the printing bill here at the DX Audio Service, how about if I give you the addresses that you need to know? There's really only two addresses. The first is the Publication Center, and the address is Post Office Box 164, Mansville, that's M-A-N-N-S-V-I-L-L-E, all one word, New York, 13661-0164. The telephone number at the Publication Center is area code 315-387-3583, and that is used for ordering publication materials such as reprints or After Dark editions. Everything else should come right to us here at the DX Audio Service. And our address is the National Radio Club DX Audio Service, care of Great Northern Broadcast Company, Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio, 45802-5031. Our telephone number for the email system is area code 419-228-4199. Now, when you call that number, you'll get our email system. You press 1 to tell it that you have a touch-tone telephone, and then you have the following options. 1, if you want to leave a message to me or Debbie. 2, if you want information on the DX Audio Service, and I encourage you, if any of your friends would like to subscribe to the magazine, have them call the number and press that 2 option because it tells you everything you need to know about the DX Audio Service. 3 is the Musings for Members line, and that is for members only. Please do not have your friends call, press that, and ask for information because that information is edited by another party, and if it's not a muse, it simply goes to the bit bucket, so I never get the information. 4 is the CPC test information, and the latest tests are updated every 2 weeks or so as needed on the machine. The Lima, Ohio address should be used for all your subscription information or if you have a problem with your subscription. Keep in mind that as this is email, and I'm usually out of the office a good bit of the time, it may take me a little while to get back with you, but any calls left on the machine will be returned. I'd like to take a look at an article entitled The Full-Size, Full-Performance Loop, which is written by Ray Moore. This article appeared in Volume 62, Number 22, which is the March 6, 1995 edition of DX News Magazine. Ray writes the following. During the past 2 decades, the type of loop antennas used by most serious medium-wave DXers has changed from full-size air-core loops to small amplified ferrite or air-core devices. Yet for the organization or individual who needs the ultimate in performance, there still is a compelling reason for using full-size air-core loops. The loop antenna used by the Sirius DXer is used for a number of reasons. 1, it is the only practical, high-performance antenna most of us can erect. 2, it is quieter and thus provides a better signal-to-noise ratio than long, high wires. 3, it can null interfering stations and local QRM. 4, it is a precision direction finding device when properly constructed and used. And number 5, the loop responds only to the magnetic component of the radio wave, and most local noise is propagated largely by electrical components, thus further improving the loop's signal-to-noise advantage. While loops can sometimes be used to prop up economy receivers, this article is concerned with their use with top-of-the-line receivers. The receiver should do what it does best, provide a low noise gain and adjacent channel selectivity. The antenna should do its job of providing the best possible signal-to-noise ratio on threshold signals with perfect 180-degree symmetry. So what about the history of the loop? Loop antennas were widely used with home broadcast receivers in the 1920s, but it disappeared from the scene in favor of outside antennas by 1930. Around 1938, they reappeared mostly in small table radios. They were basket wound on cardboard or fiber forms, about 12 inches by 8 inches, and attached to the back of the sets. Zenith and GE had more advanced versions. GE called theirs the Beamoscope, and it consisted of a small air-core loop which could be rotated within a Faraday shield. Zenith's was known as the Wave Magnet, and it was a conventional flat basket-wound loop sandwiched between a pair of Faraday shields. Neither was of much use to DXing. The 1950s saw the ferrite rod antenna, replacing the pancake loop in most home broadcast receivers. These were the forerunners of today's amplified ferrite loops and are still used in most home and portable radio receivers. Meanwhile, in 1946, the writer was the first to use the loop for serious foreign wave medium wave DXing. It was a 40-inch square box loop feeding an HRO receiver. It proved to be efficient and attracted some of the prominent DXers of the day. Evan Roberts, the great foreign DXer who nailed down 64 Australian and 21 Japanese verifications from Massachusetts, visited me and made a copy of my loop. Carlton Lorne, otherwise known as Count de Verres, of Radex fame, also visited me in 1950 and published plans for the loop, which he called the Moore Roberts loop. I wrote the first article on the construction and use of the loop for medium-wave DXing in DX Horizons magazine, which they published in October of 1960. The information in that article was widely copied. Just recently, the Canadian International DX Club published a reprint of a British article on loops, which was largely based on the DX Horizons article, including the drawings. The best known of the large air core loops is the National Radio Club Alt-Azimuth Loop, perfected by my late friend Gordon Nelson, the legendary DXer who heard over 130 countries in his urban location near Boston, using only a loop antenna. His loop was a 35-inch square box type with a neutralized balanced FET amplifier. It could be used passively with link coupling. Nelson's main contribution was his introduction of tilting, which allowed phenomenal null depths on local stations, and the use of an amplifier which isolated the loop from the feed line. This made possible unprecedented direction-finding capability on skywave signals. With the proliferation of amplified ferrite loops, precision direction finding has become a lost art until recently. In the early 1970s, Joe Worcester introduced an amplified ferrite rod antenna which he called the Space Magnet. It was the first of many small amplified loop antennas, both ferrite and air core. Their only advantage when used with a top-flight receiver was the small size. There are six characteristics by which one judges the quality of a loop's design and construction. Most can be measured using the proper equipment. Full-size loops used by DXers in the past were bulky, top-heavy, and ugly. Lord's version, for instance, was 4 feet square with cross-arms of 2 inches by 2-inch timbers, heavy metal angle brackets supporting the spreaders, all held together with 3/16-inch stove bolts. The average loop support was equally crude and unattractive. Sensitivity. Calculations based on the data in CIRR Report 322 show the minimum loop size required to reach the background noise level at all times and locations is approximately 1 meter square. There is a rule of thumb that the pickup ferrite loop approximates that of an air core loop with the same diameter as the length of the ferrite rod. For example, in a loop size of 48 inches square, the number of turns is 7 and the relative pickup is 1.4 dB. For a 39 inches square, the number of turns is 9 and has a 0 dB pickup. 35 inches square has 10 turns and a minus 1 dB relative pickup. For 24 inches square, the number of turns is 14 and the relative pickup is minus 4.7 dB. For 12 inches square, the number of turns is 22 inches and has a relative pickup of minus 13 dB. And for a 7-inch ferrite rod, the number of turns is 30 and has a minus 19.5 dB. These figures are not as damaging as they appear for small loops, since the background noise level increases dramatically during the period from just before sunset to just after sunrise. Therefore, a small amplify loop will probably resolve 95% of the signals that a full performance loop will, just as the Sony 2010 will resolve 95% of the signals that the most expensive receivers will. However, the remaining 5% are the very stations that the avid DXer is after. Sensitivity is not the most important loop characteristic, and it is in the other areas where the small loops are deficient. Passive loops have a noise figure of 1 since the signal-to-noise ratio at the output equals the signal-to-noise ratio of the signal introduced into the loop from the passing wave. The noise figure of an amplified loop will always be greater than 1 because the amplifier will generate some noise. How about distortion? High gain. High impedance amplifiers used with small air core and ferrite loops are prone to generate distortion products in strong signal areas. Full-size, passive loops, on the other hand, generate no distortion products. 180-degree symmetry. This is the single most important measure of the quality of the loop's design and construction. The nulls must be identical on the two faces of the loop. The depth and direction of the null on one face of the loop should be exactly the same as that on the other face, except that the bearing must be offset exactly by 180 degrees. If not, the loop will give unreliable bearings when used for precision direction finding. The cause of loop asymmetry is imbalance to ground and antenna effect. Imbalance to ground is a result of poor loop construction and reflections of feed line imbalance into the tank circuit. Antenna effect acts like a sense antenna to distort the loop's pattern. The cause is extraneous signal pickup in the tank circuit and transmission line. The signal can be picked up from long leads to the tuning capacitor. A physical large tuning capacitor, a range extending capacitor along its switch and wiring, an uninsulated vernier dial, improperly terminated transmission line, and so on. Null depth. A perfect balanced loop should exhibit the maximum theoretical attainable nulls. In practice, the actual null depth depends on external factors, such as the wavefront characteristic of the signal. The maximum achievable null depth will vary from station to station. Output impedance. The loops of the 1940s through the 1970s ignored the output impedance of the loop and were just connected to the receiver via any old cable. Fortunately, receivers in those days had medium 300 to 500 ohms to high impedance inputs and thus were not disastrously mismatched to the 3,000 ohm output of a medium wave loop with a single turn link. Run that 3,000 ohms into the 500 ohm input of a modern receiver and you are practically shorting down the loop. The solution is to transform the 3,000 ohms to 50 ohms and connect it through a 1-to-1 balun to a 50-ohm coaxial cable, then to the receiver. The transformer and balun are wound on toroidal coils to prevent the direct pickup, that is, antenna effect of signals. If the receiver does not have a 50-ohm input, you should use another matching transformer at the receiver. If the transmission line is mismatched at either end, you will then introduce antenna effect. There are a number of advantages to using 50-ohm system. Standard 50-ohm cable is easily obtainable and used properly eliminates direct pickup of the signal by the transmission line. Standard 50-ohm line amplifiers can be switched in and out, which you can't do with the high impedance amplifiers in direct coupling loops. Most modern receivers use 50-ohm inputs. Mismatches between the loop, transmission line, and receivers can reduce the loop output by 10 dB or more. Such mismatches account for most of the reports that the loop did not have enough output to drive a particular receiver while it worked well with other receivers. Matching of the loop, the transmission line, and the receiver allows the loop to deliver the maximum possible signal power to the receiver without adding noise or distortion. Small loops under 24 inches. Small loops can be either air core or ferrite core. They must be amplified because their signal pickup is from 5 to 20 dB below that of a full-size loop. Even with amplification, the signal-to-noise ratio cannot match that of a full-size loop under marginal conditions. So what about the advantages? The sole advantage of a small loop is that it is small, and thus can be made unobtrusive and somewhat attractive. The disadvantages of small loops are A. Reduced signal pickup, making amplification mandatory. B. Degraded signal-to-noise ratio. C. Susceptibility to intermod characteristics in high signal area. D. Excessive loaded Q resulting in critical tuning, hand capacity, and sideband cutting. E. Difficulty to balance well enough for precision direction finding. Most small loops are direct coupled into high gain, high impedance amplifiers. They are difficult to design and implement for superior intermod and noise performance, and they can't be switched in or out as needed. Adding regeneration compounds the problem. In addition, the loaded and unloaded cues are essentially the same, resulting in critically tuning, hand capacity, and sideband cutting. Large ferrite loops. Jim Hagen described a 48-inch amplified ferrite loop in DX News in 1976. He had some problems with 180-degree symmetry and said that weak signal performance is very good, although not quite equal to that of the National Radio Club Nelson loop. The amplifier was one of the best designs of the time, an FET push-pull circuit with a source follower output to match a 50-ohm line. It would have been interesting if he would use some of the passive loop without the amplifier. Almost in the large ferrite loop category was the Radio West 22-inch model. My unit had a noisy ferrite amplifier, but when it was replaced with an amplifier similar to Hagen's, it was a good performer. Properly matched, it also worked well as a passive loop. So what about large air core loops? State-of-the-art performance requires a full-size passive loop. Modern design practices allow us to build loops with new level of performance and appearance. Slim and lightweight sensitivity, perfectly balanced, immune from overloading, and distortion. The modern loop is a precision instrument to enhance the performance of even the best receivers. There are two types of air core loops. Number one, the box loop. This is the most common method of winding a loop, but it has a couple of serious disadvantages. A, it requires a massive and heavy frame because of the outside turns. When pulled taut, it places heavy torque on the frame. B, it has a large width to diameter ratio, which degrades the nulling and directional finding capability. Number two, the spiral wound. The spiral wound loop overcomes the problems of the box loop variety. It has an almost perfect width of diameter ratio since all the turns are in the same plane. Also, it is much lighter and more attractive because pulling the winding taut does not torque the frame, so it can be made of lighter material. The disadvantages of the spiral loop are A, the difficulty in winding it when using the preferred method of placing the support holes through the center of the supports. It must be wound on a jig like a tennis racket. B, it is almost impossible to center tap a spiral loop for use with a balanced amplifier, which is why Nelson didn't use it for the National Radio Club loop. Since additional gain is not needed and there are better ways of impedance matching, this is not really a disadvantage. The RSM Communications Model 105 loop. The RSM Communications Model 105 series of loops are wound on a 35-inch square frame and covers a frequency range of 150 to 7,600 kHz. The antennas are designed for commercial and professional users who need a precision direction-finding instrument sensitive enough to reach the atmospheric noise level. The loops are capable of unprecedented direction-finding accuracy on both local and distant, that is, skywave signals. The antennas are also suitable for discriminating low-band amateur operators and dedicated medium-wave, long-wave, tropical band DXers. For more information on this article and to contact the author, write to Ray Moore, care of RSM Communications, Post Office Box 1046, Key Largo, Florida 33037. Be sure to mention that you heard this in the DX Audio Service magazine. I can't let the 10th anniversary of the DX Audio Service go by without a few words. You know, even though I've lived my life in front of the microphone, sometimes it's hard to truly express your feelings when it comes to something as serious as this. The DX Audio Service has survived for so many years because of the devotion and love to radio. It's apparent when you realize that the DX Audio Service is not a business or a money-making project. It survives on the work of volunteers, and its costs are offset by the subscriptions that members pay. In the 10 years that the magazine has been in existence, not one editor or announcer has been paid for their services, and in fact, many of them have had to pay postage or electronic mail charges just to be heard on the DX Audio Service. Their payment comes from people like yourself expressing appreciation and involving yourself with their works in a cooperative effort. You know, many times you hear on a muse where a caller will say, "Nice magazine, Fred," or some gratifying gesture. I enjoy the fact that people recognize the efforts that goes into this publication, but I also recognize that without the help of professionals like Jerry Starr, John Bowker, Phil Wayne, Jim Snowbarger, Chris Connor, and many, many others, that the magazine would not sound as good as it does. And some recognition has to be given to my wife Debbie and daughter Connie, who also help with the database and getting information to me while I'm on the road. There are also many others behind the scene that help and provide assistance and support, such as Ken Chatterton. And that's why the DX Audio Service is successful. People, professional individuals who love radio, are the key to success of this magazine. Without them, there would be no DX Audio Service. My only wish is that we can get our name out to other listeners who still don't know about us after 10 years, so we can serve each and every radio enthusiast there is. Oh, one other thing. There is someone else that makes a DX Audio Service. It's you, the listener. Without you and your support, the National Radio Club would not exist. This is Fred Vobey sitting behind the microphone in the Sheetrock announce booth saying 73, good DX. Get out there and support radio. And here's looking for another 10.